Welcome to a special edition of Comic Pop Library. Today we have a dual podcast with Comic Pop Library and Dodge City Public Library's podcast. In this episode, we visit with Deborah Goodrich Beisel, the author of Civil War in Kansas, 10 Years of Turmoil. We're visiting with Deborah before her talk at the Dodge City Public Library Foundation's annual Wine and Cheese event. So join us as we visit with Deborah.
Hello and welcome to another informative podcast brought to you by the friendly staff at the Dodge City Public Library. And tonight we're doing a co-podcast with Comic Pop Library. We'd like to introduce myself. I'm Chris. Next to me is
Richard.
Debbie Beisel.
Kathy.
Kathy is the director at the Dodge City Public Library. Do you go by Debbie or Deborah?
Debbie, Deborah. Okay. When I moved to Kansas, I would say Debbie, and people didn't understand me. So it became Deb after a while.
Alrighty. And for those who don't know, Debbie Beisel is the author of The Civil War in Kansas, and she is doing our Wine and Cheese program tonight. Well, first of all, we want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you for having me.
Richard, I wanted to give you a chance to kind of tell the Dodge City Public Library podcast audience who Comic Pop Library is.
Just briefly, Comic Pop Library is where we do a bi-weekly podcast and some visits with individuals. The podcast, our review podcast over graphic novels, Japanese manga, TV series and movies, older sci-fi novels and some current sci-fi. And we just added a music segment to it as well. So we're doing indie and foreign music segments. So if you're interested, be sure to look at our website at comicpoplibrary.com.
All right. Also for the Dodge City Public Library podcast audience, myself, Chris, and Matt, who will be joining us here in a little bit. He's getting started early, if you know what I'm talking about. This is a wine and cheese after all. So he's over there choosing his wine. Most of us here, three of us at the table, have a wine in front of them. We briefly want to thank some of the sponsors we have for our wine and cheese: High Plains Journal, Cargill, Western Beverage, and Fidelity State Bank and Trust Company. Again, thank you for your donations so that the wine and cheese can happen.
I really appreciate the Library Foundation having me here.
Yeah, not a problem. So we have our sponsors. So one of the things that we should talk about first is who the Dodge City Public Library Foundation is. And Kathy, I'll pose that question to you.
The foundation is a 501(c) organization with the purpose of supporting the activities. Wine and Cheese is the fundraiser and sponsored, hosted by the Library Foundation. And without them, it would not be possible.
Wonderful.
They do fundraising to buy special items for the library, for our patrons to use, help the library any way that they can. And we want to thank them for all their support.
Yes, and a little later we'll do a short interview with Jim Shear. And what's his position on the foundation board?
He is the vice president.
Okay, so we'll do an interview with him, and he can kind of go into what they do for the library and for our patrons here at the library. So, okay, well, since most of us have a wine in front of them, I wanted to do a little wine review.
It's already started.
Yeah, since we've already got going. Courtesy of Western Beverage, they have a product called Copa, and they have a wide variety of different types of wine. In front of me, I've got a small glass of White Zinfandel, Pinot Grigio, and Merlot, and I know that makes me sound like an alcoholic, but right now I'm just drinking the Merlot, and it is very, very tasty. What do you got, Richard?
I played it safe. I'm used to White Zinfandel, so I went with the White Zinfandel, and it is nice. I like the lighter wine, so.
All right, and then Deborah over there.
I got the Pinot Grigio, and it's very good. It's very good. I like that. I don't like really sweet wines, mm-hmm. So it's very nice.
Let's get into the interview, Deborah. Now you're in the spotlight. Let me see. We've had a couple of people come up with some questions for you, and if there's one you don't want to answer, just say, I don't want to answer it.
Okay.
And then we'll edit it out later.
Okay.
The two people that have questions, of course, was Richard. He's the director of a library just west of here, so I'm sure he's got some good questions for you. And also, our reference librarian here at the Dodge City Public Library gave us a few questions to ask you.
Okay.
We'll start off with a question from Richard.
Just a general question. You came from the Virginia, North Carolina area.
Uh-huh.
What led you to come to Kansas and seek your degree at Washburn?
I had always worked in journalism. I wanted to be a reporter from the time I was 4 years old and watched Superman, speaking of comics.
And you got that at 15 years old, too.
At 4 years old, I wanted to be a reporter. And so at 15, I started. Yeah. I was taking high school journalism, and I started working for the local paper. So by the time I finished high school, I had 3 years of journalism experience, so I could get jobs. So I didn't really need a degree, and I would go back and forth, you know, take a class when I could. And I just got to the point where I really wanted to finish school. My mama died. I wanted to live somewhere else. I was divorced. You know, I just wanted to be somewhere else for a while. And I was familiar with Washburn. And Topeka, believe it or not, was pretty foreign to me. That was kind of an exotic place. And Topeka is a very manageable city. You know, it's not a big city. It's a very manageable city, and I'm not a big city person. But it was big enough to have public transportation and some of those things and a very good university. So I went to Washburn and got my history degree, and in the process fell in love with Kansas history and never left.
Was the interest in history before Washburn, or did that come after?
Absolutely.
Your degree?
Absolutely. I was born with the history gene. And then I was very close to my grandparents, and the distance in our generations, they were quite old when I was born. My first question was probably, or first word was probably, why? You know, why? Why did you do that? What did you do? And I would ask them, even as a child, what did you do when you were small? You know, how did you dress? How did you get there? You know, and I loved their stories. And I would go to the cemetery with my granny, and she would take care of the family cemetery, and she'd tell me about the people there. And they were real to her, so they were real to me. So history was never distant. It was always just, you know, right behind that door. It was never something that was very distant to me.
Our next question is going to come from Sam, our reference librarian.
That's nice of you to give credit.
Yeah. He might shoot me if... No, I'm kidding. All right, it says, how long did it take you to research and write your book, The Civil War in Kansas?
Researching, it's real hard to say because, you know, that's like a combined knowledge. It's not like I did not sit down to write that book and say, okay, I'm going to write The Civil War in Kansas and I'm going to start researching now. It's the result of years of research on other things and just general interest. So I wrote it in 6 weeks. I sat down one night in front of the TV and wrote the outline and the proposal to send to the press, and I wrote it in 6 weeks and maybe another week or two to kind of refine it and finish the bibliography and stuff like that. But it's real hard to say. I've been researching Kansas history specifically for 10 or 15 years. So, you know, again, that's kind of a result of a lot of knowledge and time.
Once you've covered something so long, it almost comes ingrained in you.
Right, yeah. So what's in this book is pretty much ingrained. I didn't go off on, and it's a real overview. You know, that 10 years, this is only 45,000 words. So this is my favorite stories, and it's a real overview. And I hope that it will get other people interested, especially those that aren't familiar with that period, Bleeding Kansas and the Civil War, get them interested in finding more.
With your research, some of the reviews said you use a lot of primary resources.
Yep.
Is that established collections that you pulled from, or were you able to go out and actually do some actual investigation on your own? And if you did you find some people reluctant to give you some information?
You know, on the Civil War, most of that would be archival. So you're looking at documents, at letters, at things that belong to people that are no longer alive. So there are families that have holdings. You know, there are things in the Kansas State Historical Society, for example, that you can read but you cannot use. You know, so there are things that are restricted in certain libraries. But I came across some really wonderful things. I didn't have to do any deep research again because I was real familiar with these sources already. But I came across a couple of items just in making sure I had some dates and stuff right that were really rich. So I kind of surprised myself a couple of times.
Well, it's nice to have the primary resources where a lot of times authors tend to rely on secondary instead of primary.
The voice, there's nothing better than the voice itself.
Of the people.
You know, the people themselves.
True.
Yeah.
Deborah, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Since you were living in Topeka, you were up in the area, Topeka, Lawrence area, where so much history took place during the Civil War.
Right.
Do you have a favorite Civil War character?
Oh, good grief, yes. I've got a lot, but Buffalo Bill Cody is my favorite American, period. I love Bill Cody. I studied at the Buffalo Bill Center in Cody, Wyoming. He grows up during Bleeding Kansas. You know, most people aren't aware of that. They see the showman and the buffalo hunter, and his dad is one of the first martyrs to the cause of Bleeding Kansas. He enlists. He's a Kansas Jayhawker. He's actually not real proud of being a Jayhawker, but he joins, and he's got good reason. You know, he's got good reason. But he's by far my favorite character. But then there's no end to the list. There's so many colorful people.
On the media experience that you have, was that a blessing when it came to actually with your contacts to get published work out there, especially your video documentary items?
You know, it is a blessing, and it helps to understand how it works. You know, for people that are just starting and don't know how the media business works, it can be extremely frustrating, and it really helps. And like one of the things, I do some consulting at the Command and General Staff College, and I teach officers how to deal with the media. And basically, you know, if you want to boil it down to like one maxim, media, like everybody else, are lazy, and the more you do for them, the more likely you are to get the story you want, you know. So if you hand feed stuff, you're just more likely to get something. So do as much as you can for them.
Okay.
And be nice, you know, be nice.
Very much so.
One more question, because we're getting up to our time limit here. Do you have any other books or special projects presently in the works?
I do. I spent this morning across the street at the Heritage Center. Michelle Martin, a dear friend of mine and a historian and reenactor, are doing a book called Kansas Forts and Bases. Barb Vincent was nice enough to open up for me this morning, and I went over and researched the Dodge City Airfield, which is fascinating. I got some fantastic stuff. So that'll be out next spring, also with the History Press.
Is this going to be a kind of like a combination of you take your photography from the time of the actual fort in existence, and is she going out and taking current pictures to compare and contrast?
Some of it. You're limited. You know, you can only do about 60 images, and we're doing it in an encyclopedic way. So, you know, like Fort Bissell, for example, special to my husband, may only have a paragraph and might or might not have a picture. Fort Dodge may have a couple of pictures. It's going to have a few pages. Fort Leavenworth, example, gets a lot more pictures and a lot. So you really can't. We don't have the flexibility of doing a before and after on each one. I'd like to, and some of them we will.
Well, you've described yourself as a missionary for history.
Yep.
In that aspect, with doing this new book that you're currently working on, is the preservation of our historical sites, is that where it needs to be, or is that still a daunting task, and do we need to do more to try to save some of our history and sites?
We always need to do more. What I hope the book will do, just like the Civil War in Kansas, I want Kansans to appreciate what they have. They've got to understand what they have first. And what we have in Kansas is phenomenal. We have a phenomenal story. We still have, fortunately, some really incredible sites. And in order to preserve them, people have to realize what they are and why they matter.
Yeah, and there's lots of forts around that no one even, well, they're no longer around.
Right.
But people have no idea, like Fort Mann.
Yeah.
Close to Dodge City here.
Yeah.
Most people Well, they might have heard of it, but they have no idea where it is.
And one of my favorites is Fort Zara.
I am not familiar with that
Fort Zara was named for Zara Curtis. He was the son of one of the generals in the Civil War, killed by Quantrell's men at Baxter Springs. And that's right outside of Great Bend. Mm-hmm. And so there's a picnic area there now with a marker that is not on the side of Fort Zara. Fort Zara, there were actually two locations, and neither one of them are right there. But it's an Indian Wars era fort, and it's just a wonderful story. Everything about it's just a great story. And yeah, nobody knows.
You know, right.
There's just a few nerds like me that know about Fort Zara, and that's it. So
there was mention of another work you're working on for the First Ladies of the
Civil War.
When you were researching that, I believe, and see if this is actually true, that even though they were on opposite sides, their concerns were probably still the same for the nation as well as for their husbands.
They had very parallel lives, Mary Lincoln and Verena Davis, and their lives are so parallel. It's very interesting, and they were such different personalities. And so their reactions and how they handled life was so very different. They're a wonderful contrast, and that, after the first of the year, that's what I'm focusing on. I sent off a sample chapter to a publisher, so they're very, very interested. So you're right, I've been researching that more than 10 years now, and that's going to be my focus after the first of the year.
Very nice.
All righty, and we want to let our audience know that we do have that book available in the library.
Available for checkout. All it takes is a library card.
And that cost how much?
Your first one is free.
All right.
Is this a great country or what?
Okay, and Matt is very sorry that he couldn't join us for this interview, but he says he'll be back for part two of this podcast. And
before we leave out,
go ahead.
Would you want to, is there any website that you'd like to put out so people can find information about you anything like that?
I do a blog when I get time, but I've got some good backstories on it too, and it's just masondixonwildwest.blogspot.com. I think if you Google my name, it comes right up.
Okay.
So Beisel, B-I-S-E-L, Deb Goodrich Beisel.
All right, I'll put it as a link on our show notes.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'd appreciate that. I get a lot of hits. I get a lot of hits, and it's just whatever history thing hits me for the day.
All right. Very nice.
Okay. We want to thank you for joining us for part one of this two-part series on the Dodge City Public Library's Wine and Cheese. I almost forgot where we were at.
How much wine have you had, Chris?
Exactly. All right. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.